Hello, kids. Matt Segundo here, and it's more of our young roving correspondent running around Alternative Press Expo, but failing to get a single phone number from a beautiful young lady. If I were 20 years younger, I'd challenge this idiot to a fist fight. But no matter, here is part two of our coverage.
Okay, so I am here once again talking with Julia Wirtz, who now has six Fart Party comics, as well as I Saw You. Perhaps you could talk about the development of Fart Party and what I Saw You is all about.
I Saw You is an anthology with a bunch of cartoonists who took Craigslist missed connections and then made comics out of them.
Okay, and how did this come about exactly?
Just an idea that I was tossing around in my head, and I put a blog up about it, and within a month I had 80 submissions.
Wow. And what process did you do to whittle down those submissions?
I didn't really. I just took the first 30 and put them in the book, and then the rest I'm putting in a number two. Because I didn't get any that were bad. Like, all of them I really liked, which was surprising. But none of them were horrible that I felt like I should cut.
Fart Party marches on. What do you attribute to making this Fart Party happening more and more? Now you're at number six, it looks like.
Oh, lots and lots of beer.
Beer and farts.
Yeah, it's true.
Are there any developments in these latter Fart Party?
Yeah, well, the first two are like more relationship comics, and then I got dumped, and so the last three are my life. Like only mine without the relationship.
Wow, so more somber tone to Fart Party.
Not really. The same.
Okay. Well, Julia, thanks so much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Clear the custard. Can you cut the mustard? Cut it. You got a
butter mouth, buttercup, butter buns, butter up, black hanky, straight shot. Okay, so I was passing by a booth and I found some very unusual underwear designed by someone here. Maybe you can identify yourself and explain what the purpose of this underwear is, why it exists, and why it is being offered to the public at large.
My name is Julie Walker, and I really wanted to put weenies onto underwear because it seemed like a good idea.
It's very good to, you know, to remind people what is contained in the underwear, right?
Yeah, or, you know, maybe if there doesn't have to be anything contained in the underwear necessarily. You know, I have some for boys and for girls. Eventually, I will make underwear for that have girls' junk on them also.
Well, not junk. It's not necessarily junk. That's the whole point of this underwear, I think.
Pardon?
You're referring to these penises as junk.
Well, it's a euphemism.
Of course it is.
Okay,
well, what other do you do anything else besides design this kind of underwear? Or?
I make these prints right here. See? And I have a zine.
Okay.
The zine is Good Ideas for Tattoos by Julie Walker.
Now, do you ask other people for good ideas, or are these your ideas for good for tattoos?
They're mostly my ideas.
Do you have a sort of, like, kind of peer group to sort of get good ideas for tattoos? Or?
No, I get them myself.
Okay. Well, fantastic. Where's, well, thank you very much, Julie.
Taters and their senses, it's
all right. Okay, so what is your name, sir, and what is the Seven Habits of Highly Negative?
My name's Lev, and Seven Habits of Highly Negative People is third book of my series, Tales of Mere Existence. It's comics and animations. Each book that I'm selling comes with a DVD of animations.
Is this your way of kind of standing out from the crowd by having this kind of DVD component to your work too?
It wasn't conscious that I started doing the animations before I started doing the comics, and so it wound up actually being really a way to get the animations out there in a way that that people would be able to take them home other than just the web.
Oh, so basically you just wanted to have a kind of print component to this so that they can also see these and actually sort of a tactile approach.
Pretty much, yeah, but I think that doing it with the comic has actually made it interesting to do for a longer period of time because I'm using the same voice for both the comics and the animations. But there's different kinds of stories that work differently for each medium. Do you know what I mean? That, like, you know, some stories work better on comics than in animation form.
Of course, you got like a static panel versus a live panel. There's going to be major differences. Well, maybe you can kind of. Do you find this sort of a problem? Do you repeat stories and do them for both print and animated kinetic form?
I don't really feel like that. I repeat any stories, but I mean that the attitude. Oh, the themes get various themes. I mean, it gets just sort of repeated all the time. Really, I mean, like that. Generally, the stuff that interests me the most is the way that people will kind of get in their own way and keep themselves from doing and getting what they really want.
All right, well, thanks so much.
Sure thing.
Okay. Okay, so who am I talking with and what is Rhapsody?
I'm Bill Morris. Rhapsodies is a webcomic that's been the daily since November. It's essentially a haphazard description of the life of three individuals living in the same apartment building and all of their friends.
And your goal here is to take the webcomic and put it into sort of a mini-comic print form?
It's a little bit of that, and it's just pretty much spreading the word, getting those IPs up, and with any luck...
I see no URL here, though.
It's right...
Are you a humble man?
No, I am not. I'm as vain as heck, and there's the URL right there.
How long have you been doing Rhapsody?
Oh, about 3-4 years, full-time anyway. I've been doing it before that, but before that it was pretty much just a glorified hobby of which it probably wasn't worth showing and didn't have much of a deadline.
So you do these things every day? I was in 5 days or 7 days?
Five.
And you've had no break whatsoever?
Oh, occasionally I get my buffer zone up enough that I can goof off for a day or two, but for the most part, been sticking to the doing them 5 a week. And
that's a lot of strips. What steps do you take to kind of ensure that you don't get burned out?
Oh, essentially, I am a regular at my favorite brew pubs. And
all right, well, thank you very much.
No problem.
Okay, I'm here with Neil Jam, and he seems to think he knows how I think. However, Mr. Jam, let's ask you, what is the situation with your Neil Jam universe?
Well, the situation is it's still going strong, and I'm happy to be back with you today.
Are you really?
Yes, yeah.
Is it still predicated by this Neil Jam identity of yours?
Well, I am Neil Jam, so it goes without saying.
You seem less excited and less exuberant than last year. What's going on? Are you a more thoughtful Neil Jam this year?
Oh, no, I'm always thoughtful. You know, I'm a very laid-back individual. I like to take it easy. And, you know, when it's time, I unleash. And
Are you just nervous because of the microphone?
Oh, no. See, I want to get to the good stuff here. Come on.
Okay, well, what is the good stuff? Tell us about your comics.
Tell you. I told you last year, didn't I?
Yeah, but I mean, I'm asking for a follow-up where we're actually charting the progress of Neil Jam here. Who else has done that in your career?
Okay, well, okay. Let's see. You know, I've been doing more Neil Jam. It's getting better. It's growing bigger, the universe. More characters doing more things in a bigger way.
In a bigger way? How big are we talking about here, sir?
Well, we got more issues. We got more space with the more characters and the storylines, so.
Why don't you, have you considered like naming characters, like two characters the same name? Like there could be many Neil Jams.
Not really, I haven't really considered that.
Is there gonna be a Neil Jam concordance so that the reader can track all the many characters?
They're, you know, they track them through things like this, these kinds of conversations.
But you're not actually gonna, you know, provide information or context here. I'm asking you for that, sir. I'm asking you to plot the evolution of the Neil Jam universe, and this is what I'm getting?
I'm disappointed by these questions, man. Last year, like, you were on point.
I know, I was on point, but I'm on point this year because we're following up. You've introduced me to Neil Jam, and now I want to know what has become of Neil Jam, what has become of the universe.
It's better. What more can I say?
And now, how? What? By what token is the Neil Jam universe better? Is this your own perspective, or have other people assured you that, yes, the Neil Jam universe has gotten better over the course of the last year?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's like a cumulative thing, kind of like physics. It picks up speed as it goes along, and power and energy. And ultimately, you know, in what, 100 years, it's just going to be this huge explosion that will kill everybody.
Okay. Really? The Neil Jam universe is going to destroy the universe?
Yes.
By, oh, wow. Well, that's fantastic. Thank you for not thinking of humankind so highly.
No problem.
All right, take care. Okay, so I am here with a man who has decided to appropriate every known cultural construct here. What is this? Who are you, sir, and how did this come to be?
I'm Brandon Bird. I just started painting silly pop culture things in college when I learned to paint, and now I have a career out of doing so.
Okay, and how did this career come about? Obviously, you struggled for some degree, or what did you do to get attention here?
I put everything on my website, brandonbird.com, and eventually, over the course of 4 or 5 years, people started coming back, and I started offering products, and they started buying them.
Now, is there a particular criteria? You have a Christopher Walken t-shirt, a Law & Order coloring book. Is there a criteria you actually decide upon to choose, yes, that's the cultural thing I want to pilfer?
It's stuff that I like, and stuff that's, you know, silly, but sort of on the fringes. I mean, it's not like real, you know, celebrities they get and like people or whatever. They're just on the outskirts, I guess.
Well, we have a Reservoir Dogs shirt where we have Batman there instead of the...
That's the cast of Law & Order doing the walk at the end of the credits.
I don't watch television. I'm so sorry.
That's probably for the better.
What do you do to keep yourself, you know, constantly generating ideas? I mean, surely taking from other kind of cultural constructs, I mean, does this put a limit on your creativity? Or?
A little bit, because after a while it starts to get a little maybe less special and harder to come up with things that are really kind of fresh. Instead of just like, oh, I'll put that celebrity's head onto this body doing this funny thing. But I spend a lot of time on the internet reading IMDb, just thinking, sketching.
I guess what do you keep, I mean, how do you keep the muse operating when you're just constantly generating culture?
I just try to think, I think it's more about not just coming up with a lot of stuff, but being able to cross out ideas and not use them. And sort of just filter it until you get things that are weird as well as funny.
Gotcha. Well, Brandon, thanks so much.
Look at there. Look at there.
Look at there.
Look at there.
I'm happy to talk with someone who has Ming Doyle's your name, right?
Ming Doyle's my name.
And what is your artwork?
Well, my artwork is an amalgam of comic book art, it's kind of indie stuff, and then just weird illustration work that kind of focuses on gritty, pretty, grotesque imagery.
What is the Ming Doyle formula? What would you say if you could describe yourself in 6 words or less? You've described yourself earlier, but I wanted to actually describe you in 6 words or less. Tell what this is all about.
East meets West, super awesome, cool.
Okay. How long have you been doing these kinds of contextualizations?
Well, I just graduated from art school last semester, so I'm very young, right out in the field, and I'm just, you know, shipping around to the major comic companies like DC and Marvel, and also self-publishing, so...
Hope your day is full of surprises, reads one greeting card. There's a morbid feel to these greeting cards. How did this come...
To the greeting card?
Oh, wait, that's his.
Well, I think we both kind of had a weird, comical, morbid feel, yeah.
Okay, got it. All right, well, thanks so much.
Thank you.
What's your name?
My name's John. John Rivera.
And what is Molitor?
Molitor is basically a... We call him the hero of the wasteland. All he does is ride around on his motorcycle, drink his beer, and he shoots mutants who listen to easy listening rock. He likes to listen to hard rock. That's all he's about.
This is set in the apocalypse. I thought it was actually set in the present day.
Oh, it could be set in the present day when you really think about it, you know. But so basically, it is a rock opera with a comic that comes with it. And we're kind of working on like little 5-minute video vignettes of the...
Wait, this started off as an opera and became a comic?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you were the one who composed the opera too?
Yeah, well, I wrote my partner and I wrote the opera, and our animator is floating around here somewhere. You know, the person who's actually done all the physical drawing is here somewhere, but myself and my friend, we've done all the music. And
how did this come about? How did Molitor start?
Started as a joke. A joke 2.5 years ago, we saw a guy with a mullet, and joking around, we called him Molitor, and it turned into this thing. We're like, hey, let's create some guy and write some music about him. And then, boom, it's turned into a rock opera.
Has the opera actually really been performed in all of its...
Not yet. We're thinking about, we have to figure out how to get it done, you know, because it's staging and all this other stuff that has to go with it. I've been told that it can be performed. You know, we've written it in a way where it can be, but it's just getting the right, the right way to get it done. I'm not too sure how we would do it at this point. But
so you actually have like the songs and a script and everything ready to be performed.
The songs are what you hear now. That music that's playing now in the background is the music to the musical. So we have all that, and the script is halfway done to the musical because it has to be written to this now.
I'd like to see Molitor play Carnegie Hall just to sort of, you know, get the highbrow people kind of reconsidering their priority.
Well, we call it highbrow rock for lowbrow people. That's what we call it, what we're doing.
Okay. Cool, well, thanks very much.
If thank you. I right. can, a no-name Grimble Crumble, and little gnomes stay in their homes,
eating, sleeping. Okay, so I'm here with two fantastic people who have comics called Metro Gnome and Mard. Perhaps you could introduce yourself and talk about these.
My name's Steve Fusen. I'm the guy who did all the work. It's my wife, Tiffany, who's helping me sell the work.
She didn't do any of the work, you're saying?
No, I'm the artist. She got the business degree. She pays the bills.
Yeah, I married this loser. Sorry.
This guy's the stiff, you know. Okay, well, what is Mard and Metro Gnome all about?
Well, Mard is basically a rated R kind of story about a woman who wants a really nice life and does bad things to get there. And because I wanted to do something a little tamer, with Metronome I went more of a PG route. He's a gnome living in a city, but he feels out of place because gnomes are really creatures of the forest. And so he has trouble interacting with people and just trying not to get stepped on and living out of garbage dumpsters when basically an angel sets him on a task, and he ends up, this is just the first issue, but the big story is a big epic myth.
So gnomes are for PG people, you're saying?
Yes.
You take no chances with the gnome.
It's more of a cartoony character, marketable, kid-friendly.
There's not a lot of gnome porn out there, you know what I mean?
Oh, well, speak for yourself. No, I'm sure there is. I'm sure there's some pervert with the gnomes. Why did you take the safe route with the gnome? You could have gone off the deep end like you apparently did with Mard. What's the difference between these two titles?
Well, Mard was the first thing I did straight out of art school, and I really just wanted to express myself and find myself. But then I found that I couldn't really share it with my family. I didn't want my mom to read it. So I wanted to do something that was a little friendlier, and I like all sorts of things. I like movies from Disney movies to episodes of Tales from the Crypt, and there's no reason I can't illustrate both if I like both.
Okay, well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Cool. Who are you, sir, and what is this business that you have right here?
My name is Zach Corzine. I represent Couriers of Ruin, illustrating, publishing, and recording label. We're unveiling the new way to experience a story by incorporating all senses to a reading experience.
All senses, including smell?
Including smell, taste, and touch. You name it, we're bringing a story to life in a literal sense.
What if one sense competes with another? What if one favors certain senses? Like when I read a book, I use my eyes, obviously, but I might be distracted from the text because I might smell something. What do you say to that typical reading experience.
Okay, well, I think what we're doing here is unveiling the art of a new age. Reading, as far as we know up until now, has been using one sense to experience the story, but reading's on a national decline, a 20 million person drop in the past 10 years, and it's competing with multi-sense media such as TV or video games, which is a three-sense experience. And so what we have to do is take the most internal way to receive information, which is reading, and apply all senses to it to compete with this multimedia and overrun it, and to hopefully inspire a revolution of an increased reading level.
Well, sir, I myself am quite a reader myself, and sometimes actually hearing something in the background might distract me from the words. And I could also argue with you that silence, listening to silence, is a great sort of way to, you know, it's a two-part media.
Absolutely, but I mean, when you just have a story that has nothing that goes along with it, then you're limited to just the story and your interpretation from it from the words. But if you had sound that goes along to it, let's say you could read the story and then listen to sound separately in your car, and you could get another feel for another artistic interpretation of what's going on in the story.
But you are missing two pivotal aspects of any kind of experience, and that is feeling something with your heart and thinking about it with your head. One of these. It's not just a sensory experience.
Absolutely, but you don't actually interpret a smell from a story. You may imagine it, which is the power of thought, but thought is not classified as a sense. It's classified as interpretation of a sense.
But why should one use all five senses to experience a piece of art?
Because it hasn't been done yet. And we've been doing one-sense experiences for a long time, but it's losing. As far as a population, if you look at a population survey, all the most reliable reading population surveys say that we are in a national literary crisis right now because the structure of a book is failing as a source of reading.
But couldn't it not be that the book itself is just not getting out there in its existing forms? It may not be the problem with the book. It may be the problem with the books that are available.
I don't know, there's quite a diversity of books that are available. I think you could do quite a bit more with them, though. If you had other artists who not only can interpret the story, but can create stuff just out of the text alone. Imagine reading about a meal that's going on and having a cook prepare that meal at a restaurant that's inspired just by a description of the taste. That's something that's never been done, so there's got to be a reason to do it.
Yes, but if it was a cannibal cook, I would not want to necessarily smell the actual human flesh being cooked. Aren't there limits to the multisensory sort of reading?
I think the only limit is a limit that one creates for themselves.
Have you had any sort of early experiments? Do you have a test audience for these multisensory experiences?
Absolutely. We've probably tested 500 people so far. We've got a lot of pictures and stuff like that of people actually sitting down and reading the story along with music, which is our first sense edition. So they actually throw on some headphones, and we believe that the music actually sets a pace for a reader. Now, does that mean...
First sense edition, you mean you have to kind of steep into two senses over the course of time? Or?
Exactly. Like, if we introduced all at once, we think it'd be a little bit overwhelming.
So it's a second sense edition.
Right. And so, I mean, reading is the first sense, which is already, you know, sort of included with any type of reading. We're right now incorporating music along with it. So we believe that music sets the pace for a reader to read. And another observation that we can make is many children today turn on the TV in the background and listen to music in the background while they're doing their homework. And the reason why is the brain does not see fit to spend its time focusing on a one-sense experience anymore. So the brain is basically trying to consolidate or trying to find a way for a kid to do his homework or read a story by adding something else in the background, which the parent finds distracting, but the child actually finds is helpful. So we're creating media that is going to go along with it, that's meant for it. It's very relaxing and progressive, so that way we might be able to target more potential readers now than before.
Well, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Okay, so I have a man here who has brains of zombie comics. Please explain yourself. What zombie take do you have, and what is your name?
Well, I'm Christopher Perguidi, and I'm publishing Brains Zombie Comics. It's an anthology, and I write the first story in it, which is about Rush Limbaugh being eaten by zombies.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. How did, Why zombies? Is this your first comic? Or
this is not my first comic book, but it's my first full-size comic instead of a ash can.
And how did this story come about exactly?
I had some friends, and we always wanted to work together on a project. So I said, okay, let's do an anthology. And it seemed horror was really popular right now, and I love zombies. And so I got to everyone together, and we said, let's all do a story, and let's publish a zombie comic.
The thing is there are a lot of zombie comics around here, so how can you stand out among those zombie comics?
Well, we got that great name, Brains! Exclamation mark Zombie Comics.
Is it the exclamation mark that does it?
It's an exclamation mark.
Did you actually decide to put great thought into the exclamation mark?
We did. There's arguments about it. We said some people didn't want the exclamation mark. I said we have to have the exclamation mark.
Do you feel the exclamation mark is currently underserved in everyday grammar?
I do. I think exclamation marks should be used in more titles of comics. We got a whole bunch of comic books here we're going to be putting out exclamation marks.
And they all have exclamation marks.
They all have exclamation marks, like Hi-Ya Ninja Comics. Wow. Hi-Ya with an exclamation mark.
That makes all the difference sometimes.
It does. And I just got done playing a zombie in a movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the movie's called The Beginning. I believe it's just a working title, but it should be out soon. I played a zombie and I ate people.
Will this movie have an exclamation mark in its title?
I hope so. I'm trying to get them to put the exclamation mark.
You better lobby harder, sir.
That'll be The Beginning! Exclamation mark.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Check it out. Okay, so I am here with Keith Knight of the Kate Chronicles. Keith, how are you doing?
Very good, very good. It's a pleasure to be at the Alternative Press Expo, the largest event of its kind in the United States of America.
Very true. Now, you recently bolted from San Francisco to L.A. What's up with that?
Well, you know, it's getting a little complacent in San Francisco, you know, and I wanted to shake it up a bit. And over the years, I've gotten people writing to me from down south saying, oh, you know, if you have any ideas of developing anything or this or that, you know, interested in taking your stuff into another medium, you know, give us a call, contact us, you know, let's do something. So I guess at some point, you know, it's better for me to be down there so I can say, okay, let's meet Thursday,
yeah,
as opposed to, someday when I go down there. You know, it's a whole different world down there, and you know, in many ways, a lot of the stereotypes are true. Yes. But also, it's the energy down there is a lot of people working, a lot of people trying to make it down there, a lot of industry people.
You've been there a few months now,
yeah,
or
a few months. So, like, I mean, I've gotten so much work done in just a couple of months, just because you go to a cafe and everyone's working their butts off. So you're just like, well, I guess I gotta work too, you know.
Well, there are cafes like that here too. I mean,
yeah, but the best cafes are kind of like the ones where you're sitting and there's like a lot of really nice friends you see, and you sit down and you have a nice conversation and nice tea, and you know, there ain't, you know, people aren't as friendly down there. You know, it's just like, you got your work, and you know, a lot of people are in a lot of, you know, in cars, so they're not connecting on a human level the way they do here.
And now, with K Chronicles, you were talking about actually doing this on a daily basis. Did anything become of that, or
I can't really answer that question at the moment, but you know, I think folks may be seeing the K Chronicles in a whole new way. You know, before the year's out, that's all I'll say.
So many things are shifting right now in LA as we speak.
Yeah, and that didn't come because of LA, but you know, people will probably think, oh wow, he went down to LA and now it's everything's going really well. But no, things are going well up here. But it provides me a different opportunity down there, different challenges.
Also different observational venue too,
yeah,
as well. So you've had like 6 months now of K Chronicles, probably is from your observations as
well. Well, yeah, definitely. So like, you know, a lot of people, it was interesting. A lot of people were like, oh my God, I can't believe you're going down there. But now people are writing me going, oh, okay. You know, I see you have a whole new city to make fun of. And I, you know, I like what you're doing. So it's really kind of cool to see where the strip is going because of the venue change.
Gotcha. Well, thanks a lot, Keith.
Thank you. KateChronicles.com. I'm off the hill and you're on the edge of your seat, and you think about where to go. To the end of the street, and you think about where to go.